Oh, it's no big deal. No need for apologies. It's just a hobby, Roy, and just fun stuff. If you're looking for it now, I can give a quick description. It's not a difficult concept to understand, but I thought it was a really interesting application of RF energy, although I see some possible real barriers of doing what they want to do with it.
Sure, if you want to mention it now, millimeter wave drilling. Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's one of those things that sounds interesting, but it's probably going to take about $20 million of research and development to make it practical.
Yeah, the short of it is, for those who are listening, is they're using millimeter wave high-energy beam to drill through things, and they think they can drill real deep with this, maybe cheaper than conventional drilling. And that could be interesting, but I'm just wondering how you get all of that energy to the, the head of this drilling apparatus that they're conceiving. You know, how do you put, especially with the losses at millimeter wave, it's not like you're going to have a transmission line going down the hole. So how do you generate that much power at the end of a drilling rig? And, I don't know, I could probably think of a million problems getting power and, flexibility, robustness, keep things from getting stuck in there, because it's not a nice smooth hole this thing makes from the pictures. But anyway, and we could just get back to it next week if you want to review it further, but I just thought it was interesting.
Okay, yeah, we could do that. A lot of these things sound rather interesting, but then when you get to the details, that's where it becomes a mess. For something like that, you're going to have to figure out a way to clear the channel because it's going to fill with debris. And once the debris fills, the efficiency of the whole system will go to pot, and then you'll have kind of diffuse heating all over the area. It sounds like an engineering nightmare. Give me a chance to kind of read through it, and we can come back to it next week if you want.
Yeah, no problem at all, Roy, and other people might have a chance to look it up in the comments. So, yeah, just I think if you just type millimeter wave drilling, which is what I typed in, after reading a news article about it, it came up pretty easily. So, and they did drill through some interesting things, some materials. Maybe it has some other applications besides the one that's so heavily touted in the article. Real good, Roy. I'll let you pick up the next station, see what you find. And thanks for the net. We're enjoying it here in Los Alamos and Santa Fe. Hopefully some other people are listening as well. EC2GS from KC2SHO.
Thank you, John. I hope so. If so, Los Alamos people, welcome aboard. This is AC2GS, Roy here in lovely, lovely Brooklyn. Anyway, once again, we're still open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, please hit that push to talk and tell me about them.
WB2BXO with some comments.
Certainly, Frank.
Yeah, first of all, somebody asked about the EchoLink connection. Last week, I think it dropped out about halfway through. I thought I might have accidentally hit disconnect, and I swiped out the app and tried to reconnect, and no dice. But so far tonight, not plastic or whatever. I'm staying, so far I'm staying connected, but as he said, the night is young yet. As far as 6 meters goes, a couple of years ago, I think 2 or 3 years ago, using a remote station in New England, I think it was the one in Connecticut, might have been the one in Maine, which makes a big difference. I know some of the contacts were there. I made a bunch of transatlantic contacts on both CW and FT8 on 6 meters. And I thought, wow, it was going to be one heck of a sunspot peak. But so far, even though I've seen some lots of DX spots for FT8, I have not heard or decoded a thing last year or this year in terms of any real DX. The remote radio site took their New England, their Maine and Cape Cod stations off. Only the Connecticut station is there, which I think is pretty good on most bands. So that might make a difference. But anyway, like you, I have not really seen anything in terms of real overseas DX on 6 meters lately. It's been a kind of disappointing peak. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's sort of strange. I realize it's not easy to kind of publish news that doesn't have anything to say, you know, 6 meters, I don't know, type of thing. But yeah, I would have thought that by now in the cycle that there'd be more than a few articles about the dearth of 6 meter propagation. It's just, I just assumed that someplace, somewhere else, someone's enjoying 6 meters, but not with my antenna. They ain't. So, you know, it's sort of mysterious how people just don't talk about it one way or the other usually.
Yeah, if you look at the DX clusters, there are lots of 6 meter spots, mostly for FT8. And I've clicked on them and haven't heard or decoded anything. So it may be people with gain antennas are working and stuff. Last night there were a whole bunch of Australia and New Zealand spots. I think it was last night or Friday night. From the West Coast, they were presumably working across the Pacific, posting a bunch of FT8 spots. But of course, I didn't even check here because all I saw was the West Coast working them on overwater paths. But anyway, make a long story short, as I said, even though I've seen a lot of interesting spots, and people presumably working them, and in some cases, stuff being picked up by a PSK reporter, I have heard or decoded absolutely nothing this season. Go ahead.
Okay, well, in a way, it's nice to know it's not me. It's propagation in general, so I appreciate that.
Yeah. Somebody's working them. Or this stuff being picked up by RBN, Reverse Beacon Network and stuff, but it's as you said, we're not working it. It's like when we were in high school, everybody else seems to be getting the girls except us, right? WB2BXO.
Yes, indeed. Life is not fair. A lesson to be learned.
Actually, I don't know about you on the high school thing, but that was certainly true in my case, and a lot of other people's, I think. All right, next person, go ahead. I'll let you pass it on to the next person, WB2BX, though.
Okay, very good, Frank. Thank you, as always, for participating. If Steve, KC2ZUM, is still listening out there, and I think he is, I did find the right page for the PT controls. You go to EchoLink, you choose in the menu Preferences, and there's a tabbed page. Select the second tab, which is Connection, and then at the very close to the bottom is a button that says PTT Control. You click that, and that gives you access to set your push-to-talk settings on keys. So I wish you good luck with that. It's certainly doable. Like I said, I use a very similar Heil trigger switch for my hand, but I have pedals that can be macro controlled in a very similar way. So I wish Alan luck with that. Once again, I'm still AC2GS. This is still the Limewire Technical Net, and if anyone has any questions or topics, want to talk about something, especially amateur radio related, or if not science and technology, hit that push to talk.
AC2VUM with a comment.
Yes, Alan.
Okay, the first is I use that Heil hand switch as well. Sometimes when I'm on D-Star, I have it hooked up for remote radio that I have for D-Star and Wires X. It's very nice and comfortable in the hand, especially when you're dealing with situations like arthritis. You need something that's very easy to depress. And the gentleman made the comment about ham radio operators not getting the girls. Well, I was very lucky in high school. A young lady that I dated for 4 years got her interested in electronics, and to this day, we still communicate from time to time, and she's still into electronics. So I was very lucky there when it came to that. So, and yes, thanks for the info there. I'm aware of the settings for that, and we'll have to see if it works with the hardwired connection and whatnot, which would be nice. I would like to put this hand control with us through a relay and have it trigger it. I have everything else being triggered when I go to air, on air lights and other things and stuff like that, because I like a lot of light. But it would be nice to do that on this, and it would be as you call a hand ease type of thing. And I have the Heil foot pedals too, which is very nice. But thank you so much. Back to you. This is Casey. Oh, by the way, let me ask, how's the weather there in New York? Yeah, it's been about 15 years since I moved from New York. How's the weather there for this weekend? Back to you.
Well, it's November, but it's chilly. It's 43 degrees. The sun was out for a good portion of the day. It would kind of hide behind clouds every so often. But, you know, it's pretty good if you keep in mind that it is, after all, the middle of November.
Okay, we usually don't go through a cold spell down here until about January, from January to February. But this year, we've had to turn on the heat down here. It's been down in the 40s at night. And, okay, this is going to be one heck of a winter. If we're usually warm, I mean, we're, like this week, during the day, we're up into the 80s and whatnot. You know, that's the highs we're going to go right now. Then we go down to the 70s and the nights we go lower. But, you know, the weather's been kind of funny there. But in any event, we thank you so much, and it's good to know that this net is still operating, and I'll be dropping by a little more often. Back to you. Oh, and say hello to Howie for me, please, if he's still around. I forget his call sign, but Howie had a bunch of repeaters in Queens there. We lived in Queens, and we moved upstate to Fishkill for about... we were up there for 5 years before moving down here. So if Howie's still around, W-something, I forget his call sign, please tell him hello for me. He'll remember me. I'm the gentleman that used to work for WPIX. Back to you, KC2ZUM.
Do you mean HWW?
Yes, that's the one.
He was on just about 45 minutes ago. He was the gentleman who was talking about vectors, and you can convert them, and they take the conversion into division.
Okay, I missed some of that because I was having trouble with my connection. I switched over to another provider now. I have several internet connections coming in just for that purpose, because internet connections down here are not 100% reliable, and I don't know why that is. But anyway, hopefully I'll catch up with him, and it's been many years since I've spoken to Howard.
Okay, very good. Thanks as always, Alan. Don't be a stranger, and you know where to find us.
Echo 2, Yankee Dove, the topic.
Yes, Sam.
Well, Roy, you have this gentleman from Florida that's talking about CSAR and some other digital modes. I'd like to talk about, well, first of all, the depressing fact that you gave me that there's a cycle of 11 years for the sunspot and that we're peaking. So I'm 76. The next time I'll be as good as it is now, I'll be 86. Is that a rational thought?
Yep, unless the laws of physics change. You know, although we don't have a really rock-hard model for the sun, we're going on pretty much purely statistical basis. There are recorded entries of sightings of the sun that were very consistent with high sunspot activity that we have during our peaks now. So we have in recorded history 25 sunspot cycles to avail ourselves of, and it seems to be a consistent 11-year cycle so far.
Considering that, it may show that our equipment from the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s are obsolete, that the new trend, I think, is the digital mode, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're going digital, you avoid a lot of the propagation issues to a certain extent. What do you think?
I would tend to disagree. I don't think the future is inherently digital for us hams. I think, I don't know, 90%, 95% of us are using analog FM, single sideband, amplitude modulation, continuous wave, D-Star and Fusion and DMR are interesting, are used by some people, but there are a lot of people who kind of scorn the digital modes for all kinds of different reasons. Digital modes by themselves don't really offer any kind of incredibly different propagation. They propagate the exact same way. They might tolerate some degradations a little bit better than some analogs. FT8 is a digital mode in and of itself that has built-in redundancies and error corrections, and so that's great, except that the symbol rate is so slow that just having this conversation would have taken us about 20 minutes. So I don't think digital is the ultimate answer. Hams use a lot of propagation, long wave, sky wave, and such. So I think there's a place for analog transmission modes for the foreseeable future. If you're talking about software-defined radios, that's a different thing entirely. A lot of software-defined radio uses analog signals. They're just manipulated, they're digitized at the front end of the radio in many cases, and then processed digitally. But the ultimate waveform that's propagating through space is an analog one.
Well, here's the thing. We are older. And this new generation of hams coming in who are more attuned to using computers and things, and perhaps that's where the big changeover may occur that I'm alluding to. It's something like we may have a distaste for these new modes, or feel that it's not real ham radio, but on the other hand, the younger people may see it completely different. Any comments?
Well, I don't know. I think you're painting with too wide a brush. Yes, there are people like that. One of the things that actually kind of amazed me was I was under the misapprehension that most amateur radio operators were, like myself, gadget freaks and into technology. And they kind of were excited and interested about all kinds of technology. I still remember my issue of Popular Electronics, where they published a two-month article on this new thing called the microcomputer. And there was this strange Harvard student who had run to, I think it was Arizona, to be part of it. And he was scribbling a basic compiler for the Altair 8800. Back in the good old days. So I've been on top of computers since back then. I'm looking at a computer as I speak to you. I'm watching all kinds of strange things go on, and I'm monitoring the IRLP and the Echolink and all kinds of things on a computer. So I can't identify with that. I do agree with you. There are, or in some cases there were. When I first came on, there was a guy, I kind of asked him foolishly if he had a computer. He said he would never let one into his shack. He gave the old story that he uses it to write email to his grandchildren. So, but I've had less conversations like that over the last 14 years. So I think most of us out there are reasonably interested in computers. They may not be able to do everything that the kids do, eye-hand coordination and so forth, but there's a lot of amateur radio operators now that are very technical. And but again, there's still a lot of analog signal processing going on, and I think that's going to happen in the future. There's no real ultimate benefit. You have to pay the price some other way. So if you want to have something that can be understood under the noise floor, you have to settle for a very slow symbol rate that slows down any kind of rag chewing to a crawl. So unless they discover, invent, what have you, something new and completely different, most of the stuff that's available out there, it depends on the ham. Some hams, if it travels through the Internet, they don't want to know about it because that's not real ham radio to them, but you know, each to their own.
Roy, don't tell anybody, but I'm one of those guys who feels that ham radio is a microphone, a transceiver, and an antenna. That's ham radio. I am just beginning to accept the concept of repeaters. I know they've been around for a long time, but I never remember or saw an article about repeaters when I was younger. I just go past it through this shit. Now I'm beginning to accept repeaters and grasping an understanding of how they work across the country and things like that. So that's some acceptance of the new world or the new wave of electronic or ham radio. I just feel that I like looking at a big grid. Something about it. I was at the Ham Fest a couple of weeks ago, and they had a big old helicopter, and it must have weighed about 100 pounds, who knows, but it was so beautiful. You know, it just brings back the memories of what ham radio used to be like. Anyway, back to you.
Yes, Brian?
Roy, my eyes are closing, so I'm going to go ahead and go QRT for the evening. Thank you very much for answering all my questions, and thank everyone out there for participating. I look forward to next week, and hopefully I'll have a little bit more caffeine in me. Take care. 783.
Okay, Brian, thank you for coming. Thank you for participating. Pleasant dreams. Anyway, getting back, I don't know, repeaters have, I think, been around for more than 30 years. They're a little bit different than amateur radio way, way back, but still, they kind of follow everything that you said. They do not inherently require Internet access. They're operated through fundamentally radio waves and antennas and radios. The only difference is that instead of point-to-point, you know, between operator A and operator B, there's a repeater set on a highly elevated area that has access to more people in the area, and so you're able to expand the coverage of your transmissions by utilizing a repeater to repeat them. But it's kind of inherently all RF and antennas, right?
Correct. So take it one step further. You're in New York, you want to use 2 meters to speak to your friends in California using repeaters. Is that done? Is that doable?
Yeah, it's doable. It's linked to repeaters. The problem that some people might have is how you link it. It's not really a great idea to link them on RF. Limark used to have an RF link with its local repeaters, but that's local. If you're going to have, you know, cross-country, you're probably going to have to rely on some other means to link it. And usually what's used is IRLP. We used to have a Canadian repeater that would link with us every TechNet. They've gone elsewhere recently, but they used to link, and it was through Internet. So as long as you're okay with some part of the linkage being the Internet, you can have two repeaters linked together, and one is in Europe or Asia, and the other is in America. Well, you're perfectly welcome, Sam. I thank you for your participation in this as well. Someone had a comment. What's your comment, sir?
Yeah, KC2ZM again. Yeah, we have a system here in Florida which is called SARS. It's a statewide amateur radio service, and it links 70 centimeters throughout the entire state through microwave links. And it's basically set up for emergency use, but they do allow rag chewing from time to time, as long as you don't stay on too long. And it works very well. Audio quality is very nice. And I just wanted to mention that, throw that in there to the gentleman that was mentioning something about the repeaters there. And an important thing that everybody has to take into consideration, not everybody has the ability to operate RF. Now, a lot of times down here, it might be senior citizens and in assisted living places where RF is not allowed because of medical equipment and whatnot. So they have Echolink. There are ways out there today with the technology so that not everybody is disabled from operating. People should not be disabled from operating because of the HOA rules and regulations and things like that. So there are a lot of things out there that might involve Internet or even low power to allow seniors and other people that live in HOA antenna-restricted development to still participate in amateur radio. Dr. Net Control, KC2ZUM.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. I have never been a gatekeeper, and I don't intend to start now. you're having fun, if you're enjoying yourself, so be it. Although, there's always a slippery slope case. I'll give you my worst-case scenario of, is this amateur radio or something completely different? I have a person who's a member of one of my clubs, and he used to show up when he joined for about a year or two, and he's still a member, and we appreciate him, and we appreciate that he pays the dues, but he doesn't really involve him in anything that the club does for the last 10 years. But back when he used to come and I would talk to him, he would tell me that he has a lot of problems working a radio because of, you know, his limitations of his of where he lives. His apartment complex doesn't allow such things. So he had taken at the time to use a internet provider that offered internet protocol, voice over internet protocol, the same thing that a lot of the things like IRLP and Echolink and Allstar are capable of. But this was a weird one. It's not connected any place to a radio, and they set up where you can talk to another person who's paying for the service, and they inject fake QR Nancy and QR Mary and static to simulate a conversation on a band. I don't know what to call that one.
That's a good one. That's what I call it.
Yeah, I don't know. When I heard it, I was kind of sad.
That wouldn't by any chance be the, well, it sounds similar to the ham radio hotline, which is commonly used down here. But, hey, there's all kind of things out there. And here, where I'm at, I'm in an antenna-restricted area. But I find that there are always little ways to do things stealth-wise. And then again, too, there's a lot of people, because down here you just don't see many outdoor antennas on homes and whatnot. But people do utilize their attics. Put antennas in their attics, that's a big thing. And then even in mobile, it's very rare that you see mobile. I have to tell you, I'm very disappointed since I moved down here. You know, I thought I was going to be involved with so many seniors and simplex and whatnot. There's a lot of machines operating down here, but they're underutilized. So a lot of people, as I found, have done self HF antennas, and the other thing is the digital media, which I got into during the pandemic started, and that's when I really got involved in V-Star and WireXX and whatnot. So just when I was about to sell everything, you know, I came aboard with the V-Star, and I said, well, okay, I'll stay with it for a while, and met a lot of people and get a lot of interesting ideas. So there's always something out there, and I love the world of wireless. Back to you.
Comment?
Sure, Sam. Comment.
What's your handle down there in Florida?
Call sign is KC2ZUM. Kilo Charlie 2. Zulu Uniform. The name here is Alan. Back to you.
Roy, may I proceed?
Certainly.
Alan, first of all, where in Florida are you?
I'm in the Orlando area. I've been here now at this location for about 9 years or so. So I'm in Orlando. Back to you. I used to be in New York. Back here?
I think everybody in Florida was from New York. Because I love Florida, and I've been down there, have a place down there. And my father was a ham. He got turned onto the hobby for me when I bought a radio kit from Lafayette Radio, and I gave it to him to put it together, and he got hooked. And he retired and lived in Florida. Boynton Beach, and he's really into ham radio big time. We had a tower at our house on Long Island when I was growing up. I didn't use it. I mean, I really was a rebel. But putting that aside, in Florida, he would use the mobile to listen to homeowners association situation. So really never understood the significance of that until, you know, joining the Kings County Radio Club and learning more about it. But the bottom line is that he's mobile down in Florida, and he spent hours in his car, rag-chewing with people, and I just wanted to share that with you. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, Sam, thank you. Yeah, unfortunately, I kind of see the lack of activity on the bands consistently and also repeaters. So once upon a time in the days of auto patch, you could always put up another repeater that would be needed. Nowadays, there's a lot of repeaters that sit there very quietly, occasionally ker-chunking or IDing themselves, but do little else. I mean, this repeater, once upon a time, it was humming all kinds of hours. In the middle of the night, people were, you know, John and Dick and Wesley would regularly have conversations all through the night, and there were people morning drive time and afternoon drive time and all the time. You know, now they're trying to bring some of that back, which is good to hear. But it's sort of a shame. You take a look at the repeater list, and most of the repeaters that are listed in it are not terribly functional. You know, I would say any repeater that kind of has a duty cycle of less than an hour a week is kind of a sad statement. But, I mean, that's the nature of the hobby, unfortunately. When contests come, 10 meters is an insane asylum. But on a regular Sunday morning when I do my net, they're very few and far between stations, surprisingly. There's just a lot of people with other things to do these days.
Comment?
Sure.
First of all, I want to thank the gentleman for his comments and whatnot, and I used to do a lot of mobiling too, just to walk. I got tired of that, and then I went from a sedan to a minivan and set up a little shack in the minivan, and that was nice. My dream was always to do a lot of operating from the mobile. You drive to a local park and you sit and you operate half a day or whatever, bring some food along and whatnot, and have fun. But the thing with the about the machine here, the repeaters here, at first I thought it was personal. I put my call sign out and nothing coming back, but that's the way it is here. And I've asked that question to quite a few nets that I'm involved with, and nobody has an answer for that. You know, not everybody's filing keys and whatnot, so you just have to take what comes along. You put the call out, and I love being on 2 meters a lot, so, and I run some power with that so I can get out pretty far and preamp for receiving and whatnot. And it's just that here you find that 2 meters is active only in the evening for nets. There's a lot of nets, but when nets go off, they could be on for 15 minutes to a half hour. When they go, then that's it. It's quiet. I can't raise anybody on any repeaters down here after 11 p.m. or anything like that. So, you know, I guess the only thing there, you can jump on HF, but as far as FM, you know, it's very quiet. And then everybody you talk to, everybody's got plenty of radios, you know, and they're awesome. It's kind of use them, that's the other thing. Back to you.
Well, yeah, I don't think... Yes?
I was just wondering if Alan belongs to a radio club down in Orlando.
Yeah,
I did. Involved with. They're not doing too much, actually. That was the Disney Club down here. And they're pretty quiet. And that's another thing, you know. I mean, even visitors that come down. I mean, you know, we have a lot of visitors in town, but maybe one or two would get on the Disney repeater, and that's it. That's very quiet. But I used to be, I'm a lifetime member of the QSY Society there when I used to live in New York. Up there in Fishkill, and I'm kind of used to things being busy. Down here, it's quiet, so what are you going to do? But to answer your question, currently, no, not a member of any club. I just participate in a lot of nets. Back to you.
Well, thanks. As much as, you know, hams unfortunately ending up as silent keys, with the demographics we tend to have, that's always a problem. But thankfully there are a lot of still around. The FCC has over 750 million licensees. Unfortunately, most of them are technicians who probably have a Baofeng at the back of their drawers, you know, in their desks, and they haven't used them or charged them in years. But that's the problem, that for whatever reason, the motivation behind, you know, finding time to play radio is less and less seen on the waves. So, you know, you just have to deal with it as best you can. I try to get more younger people into the hobby. You know, they go around to parks on the air and activate them, and you know, it's good to see things waking up. But I don't know, it's very difficult to bring back things that have faded away over time, unfortunately.
Comment?
Certainly.
It's funny you mentioned CODA, because that's on my bucket list to do next. I'm starting to watched some YouTube on it. I bought the book, the ARRL book on CODA. I even signed up on CODA website, and I just gotta figure out the next few steps. But that's my next experiment to ham radio. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, Sam, that's excellent. Just this morning, I was setting up the radio for the 10-meter net. And about an hour before it starts, my 10-meter net starts at 11 a.m., but about 10 a.m., I was just kind of listening around the 10-meter band, and there was a guy doing a parks on the air activation. So, you know, POTA is very popular.
KC2ZUM here. That I can think is a big deal down here. That I can say. For the people that I have met personally, they do a lot of that. I mean, you know, I guess that's the next big wave in the hobby. So at least there's something going.
Roy, you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah, parks on the air activations, very popular recently. I hope it continues. Unfortunately, that's the nature of things. People all of a sudden get involved, see a lot of activity, and then after a while, people kind of tire of whatever it is and move on to something else. You know, people who go fox hunting for transmitters, that peaks and valleys. FT8 is a consistent winner. No matter when I look at the spectrum on my pan adapter, I see activity on the FT8 portions of the band. I mean, that's a constant. I've never seen it falter. So, you know, there are modalities that gain popularity and unfortunately often lose them, you know, eventually. Nothing lasts forever. You know, the only constant in life is change.
Call
that evolution. But anyway, the only reason I missed your 10-meter net today was I was on the golf course. Actually froze myself to death, but we had a good time. On the POTA, it's interesting because it is a type of contesting on a certain level, and it's also not much rag chewing. So once again, it's a little bit impersonal in terms of what ham radio was or could be or should be, where it's more than your call sign and your location and strength and out the door you go. So the encoder is sort of a type of limited drag chewing vehicle. But it is interesting to have activity, as you said, the band to have the activity good. Not quite hamming in the sense that we would consider hamming. Anyway, back to you, Mike.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's different strokes for different folks. It's just as legitimate to be a contester or a DXer, you know, get your worked all state certificate and what have you, where there's very short contacts made, versus rag chewing. Rag chewing is just one of the many different ways that people express their hobby. I really enjoy rag chewing, as most people listening to this technical net have figured out through the years. I don't really like the wham-bam, thank you, ma'am, of contesting or DXing, where you don't really know anything about the other guy and you never learn anything. I like to interact with people. I like to learn things from them and get an appreciation for their way of looking at things. And you don't really get that in contesting, but in contesting you don't need to get that. It's a different mode. So, I appreciate all the different variations that the hobby presents, and I tend to gravitate towards the ones that suit me more than others. And I think that's what we all do.
Contact?
Yep.
You know, many, many years ago, in the 60s, when I was in the CB radio, and we had a lot of clubs in the area, and anybody, most people, you know, Comstat 25A, Lafayette was a big thing, the Turner put microphone, and, you know, we would rag chew, you know, and a lot of us over the years got into the hobby and got their ticket. You know, I had my tech for a year, then went over to the general and whatnot. But I was always one that loved rag chewing. And to me, RF to RF, because I used to love Simplex when I was in New York. You could always find people to go Simplex with, or sometimes you hit over to some of the repeaters and whatnot, have a lot of fun. But here, although Orlando is more open land, only in the city, downtown, do you have this whole buildings and whatnot, and there are some repeaters there in some of the higher buildings, taller buildings and whatnot. But the Simplex thing was always the fun part of it, because, you know, it was just like a bunch of people getting together and just going around and talking. And to me, FM Simplex is just so much fun. And there's very little of it today, but it's like we keep saying, you know, whatever floats your boat, and there are people trying to get more people into the hobby down here, but once you throw a book at them, well, I won't say throw a book at them, but you know, when they ask is there any studying involved and whatever, then you lose some people, and that's the sad part. It's not much to do. You know, it's not like you're asking them to become a medical doctor or anything like that. But people just don't want to study today. They don't want to, you know, everything they want the easy way, and that's unfortunately the sad part of it. Back to Matt.
KC2GS. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, the tests do not stress people. They're not trying to turn everyone into an electrical engineer. They give you the answers. All you have to kind of do, if you want, is just review the questions and the answers. It's not a great deal of work, but, you know, unfortunately, especially as we get older, we tend to lose patience for things. So I can reason out why that might be a problem for some people at certain ages. And then there are other people I know who are very bright, but they just are unable to take exams. They get anxious, and then once that happens, it all goes to pot. So it's unfortunate. You know, the FCC makes it relatively easy. There's no more code requirements. You don't have to draw schematics. You don't have to give values for discrete components. It's really, you know, I mean, every so often I'll QST and find out about a five-year-old who passed the technician's exam. So, you know, it certainly is doable, but, you know, I understand some people just don't want to even try. If you don't try, you can't fail. So I guess that's the slogan they live their lives on.
Comment?
You want to know what's very popular down here, which I found in the last year or two? GMRS. I have a GMRS license. My wife and I use that for personal communication. But GMRS seems to be more popular than amateur radio. And I have found that there's a lot of amateur operators using GMRS as well. And I remember years ago that it wasn't. It was expensive to get into, getting the equipment. Now any of us can get Motorola equipment next to nothing anywhere, or Kenwood Commercial, or ICOM, whatever. But as I mentioned earlier, working in a TV station, I spent 18 of my years, out of the 25 years, working in master control in a network station in New York. A lot of the people that I work with were hams, and what made the shifts go by so fast and nicely was talking about all of the projects and things that people were building. You'd be surprised, I mean, between supervisors to my fellow engineers, they were all hams. And then, just before I left New York, when I had prostate cancer and was going through my treatments and stuff like that up there upstate New York, just about everybody that I ran into in the process of my, I mean, the x-ray technicians, the lab technicians, radiation techs, were all hams. And what do you think we talk about? Radio. It made it so easy to get through the whole process. Unfortunately, here now, I'm stage 4 colon cancer. And long story short with that, the doctors told me just to go on, live your life every day, do what you enjoy doing, and that is what I'm doing here. What are you going to do, sit in the corner and cry? No, you just go on living, and it kind of stretches the days, you know, it's all you can do. And I've met a lot of people in the same situation since I got into B-Star. Either they're colon cancer as well, or they know someone that is, so that helps. And I have to tell you, it's better talking to people on the air about cancer than sitting in a room at a round table, people letting out part of their feelings or whatever. I've just met so many hams that are in the same situation, and it's made it easier because we talk about it a little bit, and then we move on and go back, go technical again. Back to you. This is KC2DUM. Back to Net Control.
Well, Alan, yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, but I think you have the right attitude. You know, ultimately, it's carpe diem. Seize the day. As best you can. There's only so many for all of us.
That's what I'm doing. You know, to look at me right now, you would never know that that I'm dealing with this cancer. That's what all the doctors tell me, and that's what people that know me over the years tell me. I don't know what the answer is. When I go do my chemotherapy, my wife take on most of the people that are there. They're all thin and sickly looking, but I'm same old fat, jolly computer nerd. So, you know, I just can't be very negative about it, and or question why it happened. It happened. I beat the prostate cancer, but this is something that's different. All I can say is to anybody that I talk to, do those colonoscopies. Don't blow it. Do that and keep abreast of everything. Back to you. What?
Intuition. Wesley recognized. Yeah, I agree with you, Alan. Good advice to everyone. Screening is important. So, Wesley, what do you want to say? Wesley, did you want to say something?
Yes, the Paul sent me email about the video that was tested in space by NASA. That was a British guy who, it's hard to say made discovery, but actually the chain was making a fontaine. And I found pretty interesting his comment about his previous work, where he saw the same effect. I'm not sure if you saw the video, but if Paul could say a few words about it. He was talking about the chain, about 100 feet long, and having the same effect. So if you don't mind to touch the subject, the first place report.
Any comments?
Oh, sure, WS1. Yeah, that was a good video. What he sent me was, they had a bunch of chains up on the International Space Station, and different sizes and different types. And back to Don Pettit, which one of my favorite astronauts. He's great in photography, but that's his main thing. But he was doing the experiments with the chains, and they were showing how they would react in microgravity. And he bring a conversation with a guy on Earth that brought this all up. And they went back and forth talking about it, as they were doing it. He was allowed a certain amount of time as they do on the space station. When they have time, they'll do something like that. But the guy that was talking to him, he had a chain on Earth, and he was showing that this long thin chain would come out of a bucket and automatically come out of the bucket. But the reason I said that to Wesley is because we bring up this long, 100 feet or longer, but down to a lower level, maybe one or two levels down below. Let me drop it. And we were there. I'm talking about these were heavy chains that you would lift up, 20-ton items, from the ground up. These are very heavy chains, and then we would have them in a big bucket, and maybe at some point you would need it to bring it down, maybe the whole thing down to it open down below you. But to do that, instead of getting a hand card, bring it to an elevator and all that, you would just take the chain and that was in the one end of the chain that was in the bucket.